Welcome inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilly. What is the human impact of a failure to prioritize workplace safety?
He prayed the Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. It was a long time before I could say that prayer again, because every time I went to say it, I heard the panic in my son's voice as he was saying that prayer. It's one of the things as a mom that I've really struggled with, is that my son died in terror. He didn't die in peace. He died in terror. And it didn't have to happen.
When families in Kentucky lost loved ones who were on the job, some suspected the government not only neglected to prevent their loved one's death, but also failed to investigate the companies who neglected to protect workers.
It's just everything about it is a slap in the face and disrespectful to that individual and that family.
A federal investigation found that some of them were right, and some employers have multiple safety violations. So why does the government reduce their fines, sometimes as much as 90%?
How significant is an enforcement system based on fines if the fines are reduced enough so that the employers are not essentially punished?
You'll find these stories and more this week inside Appalachia. Welcome inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilly. In December of 1970, nearly 50 years ago, President Richard Nixon signed into law the Occupational Safety and Health Act.
And so we see a bill that represents in its culmination the American system at its best. Democrats, Republicans, the House, the Senate, the White House, business, labor, all cooperating in a common goal. The saving of lives, the avoiding of injuries, making the places of work for 55 million Americans safer and more pleasant places. This is certainly a great goal.
And I guess those words still ring true. It's a goal, because 5 decades later, people are still being killed and injured in workplace accidents. On this show, we'll explore how weak regulatory laws and a failure to prioritize worker safety may be contributing to more deaths and a higher risk of workplace accidents, both at the state and national level. According to the Occupational Health and Safety Administration, or OSHA's website, on average, about 14 people a day in the United States are killed while working. OSHA is the government agency responsible for regulating workplace laws in the U.S. The agency was created after the Occupational Safety and Health Act was enacted. OSHA doesn't have a big budget or staff. In fact, just a little more than 2,000 OSHA workers are charged with making sure employers across the country comply with regulations. In some states, the federal OSHA program works alongside state safety programs. That's the case in Kentucky. But a report by the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting found that the state worker safety program regularly misses workplace safety violations, fails to interview witnesses, and doesn't figure out the cause of the accident. These shortcomings leave Kentucky workers at risk. An audit by the federal OSHA program backs up what Kentucky journalists found in their series of stories called Fatal Flaws. We'll start with a report by Eleanor Klibanoff from the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting about the families fighting for answers after a loved one died in the workplace.
On what would have been her 43rd wedding anniversary, Lisa Hobbs is standing in her front yard watching dump trucks roll down her street. One of those trucks killed her husband.
There's that one.
In December 2016, Gene Hobbs was working for the Meade County Public Works crew. He was raking along the side of the road when one of those dump trucks backed over him. The driver then accelerated forward, hitting him a second time. Hobbs died at the scene. An eyewitness and the Kentucky State Police trooper on the scene said that the truck's backup beeper wasn't audible on the noisy work site. So maybe Hobbs didn't hear it coming.
Okay, let's hear that one.
Kentucky's Worker Safety Agency tested the beeper on a quiet street later that day and said it worked fine. The state inspector didn't interview the sole eyewitness to the accident. He didn't document employee interviews, and he didn't properly investigate numerous possible worker safety violations. More than a year later, Lisa Hobbs worries that truck is still putting people in danger. When it backs down her country road, She listens to hear if anything has changed.
No backup beeper. No backup beeper.
Gene Hobbs' case is not an anomaly. In fact, it's the norm. During fiscal years 2016 and 2017, nearly every single inspection the state conducted after a worker fatality had serious shortcomings, according to both a federal audit and a KYCIR analysis. In Gene Hobbs' case, the Kentucky Occupational Safety and Health Agency, known as KIOSH, didn't issue any violations or fines to Meade County, Gene Hobbs' employer. Instead, the state appeared to blame Hobbs for his own death. A KIOSH supervisor wrote in an email that he, quote, just zigged when he should have zagged.
That's not the truth, you know. It's not the truth. It just tears you up. You don't know what to do.
Kentucky is what's known as a state plan, meaning federal OSHA allows the state to operate its own worker safety program. That's as long as it's at least as effective as what the feds would do. But according to the audit federal OSHA issued in August, Kentucky is not meeting that standard. It identified more shortcomings in Kentucky's agency than any of the other 27 state-run programs. The audit also included a special study that specifically criticized how the state handles worker fatality investigations. According to the audit, KIOSH often didn't interview witnesses and didn't determine the cause of the accident. In some cases, the agency improperly blamed the employee who died when it wasn't their fault. When KIOSH did issue violations and hand out fines, a majority of companies saw those penalties cut by at least half by the end of the process. Because of these failings, the audit says workers in Kentucky continue to be exposed to serious hazards. Jordan Barab ran the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration under President Obama.
Well, these shortcomings are very concerning. Identifying the causes of these incidents is also vitally important because otherwise the employer doesn't know how to avoid the next incident.
In a statement, the Federal Department of Labor said it's working with Kentucky on a corrective action plan. Barab says that's a big deal because the feds can take over failing programs.
Having a state program is a privilege, not a right of the states. And certainly it requires the states to address rapidly and seriously any problems that are identified by federal OSHA.
The Kentucky Labor Cabinet declined multiple interview requests for this story. In its official response to the federal audit, cabinet leaders said they were making some changes, like how inspectors document interviews. But they disagreed with other criticisms and defended their investigations. Mike Donta was a deputy commissioner over KIOSH until last December, including during the two-year period we examined. He says he didn't know the agency was doing such a poor job of investigating fatalities until he read the federal audit this summer.
There's really no excuse for a bad investigation, and I'm not trying to make some for them. However, there are things that could be put in place to help protect the program and make the program better.
He described an overworked, underfunded agency. State funding for worker safety has increased slowly over the last few years, and federal budget cuts haven't helped. That's impacted staff turnover. 63% of state worker safety inspectors have less than 3 years' experience, according to the federal audit. The state is barely meeting the minimum required number of inspectors. And Donta said, it's a tough job. Inspectors have to deal with grisly deaths and grieving families.
Whether it's a good investigation or a bad investigation, it's not going to fix what they want fixed. And that's their loved one back.
But Lisa Hobbs says that's not what she wanted out of the investigation into her husband's death. She just wanted to find out what happened. And if it was the employer's fault, she wants them held accountable.
We're not the only one. There's a lot out there. And evidently, they must mess up every one of them. Every one of them.
Hobbs ended up filing a complaint with federal OSHA. The feds reinvestigated and agreed. KIOSH had failed to interview the eyewitness, missed possible worker safety violations, and hadn't done enough to test the backup beeper. These sort of complaints, coupled with the federal audit, mean Kentucky's worker safety program is under intense scrutiny from federal OSHA. But rather than doubling down on enforcement, the state's focus is elsewhere.
Last year, we saved in penalties for businesses over $12.5 million.
Then Labor Cabinet Secretary Derek Ramsey told WKMS Radio in April about the cabinet's voluntary education program that helps companies abate workplace hazards before they get fined.
We're going to educate, and then citate.
Laura Stock is the director of the Labor Occupational Health Program at the University of California, Berkeley. She said an opt-in voluntary education program like Ramsey described isn't enough.
without a really strong enforcement unit to truly kind of set the ground below which employers are not going to fall, these voluntary compliance assistance programs are not going to be able to do the job.
As evidence of success, the Labor Cabinet often points to declining workplace incident rates, though the rate of injuries and illnesses in Kentucky remains above the national average. After a recent spike in 2016, the number of fatalities investigated by KIOSH dropped to 20, the lowest number in a decade. But for the families gathered in a high school gymnasium in Garrett County back in April, that's still too high.
Father, today we do come as family and friends of loved ones lost.
A local pastor opened the Workers' Memorial Day event with a prayer.
We thank you, Lord, today for the work that's being done to keep others from being injured as well.
That work has given this crowd an energy that's less mournful and more determined. Many of these families, like Lisa Hobbs, have filed complaints with federal OSHA about how the state handled their cases. Ron Hayes is a worker safety advocate who's been helping many of these families. He lost his son, Pat, in a grain bin accident 25 years ago this October.
Because we do not have a strong foundation with our OSHA agency here in Kentucky, we lose too many people.
Speaking to the crowd, he details the work that these families know too well.
It's a fight to get reports. It's a fight to find out what happened. Fight to get up and go on. I tell each family, you either sit in the corner and cry, or you can get up and fight.
Along one side of the gymnasium, Lisa Hobbs and her son Jeremy join a line of families. They've all become friends over the recent months, banded together by shared grief over the loss of fathers and husbands and sons and daughters. The grief brought them together, but the fight for answers, for closure, for the state to handle their cases properly, it's the fight that keeps them going. For the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, I'm Eleanor Klibanoff.
That story was part of a collaboration between the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, the Ohio Valley Resource, and the Center for Public Integrity. In 1970, OSHA estimates indicate that there were as many as 14,000 people who died on the job in the United States that year. Since then, safety regulations have helped significantly reduce the number of worker deaths. However, since 2015, the number of worker fatalities has actually risen slightly. Unions like the American Federation of Labor and Congress of Industrial Organizations point to laws that weaken regulations. Budget cuts to OSHA and state safety programs have also been a big problem. Next, we'll hear from another family who was left with unanswered questions after their teenage son was killed on the job. Jeff Young of the Ohio Valley Resource reports.
Grant Oakley's second day on the job was the last day of his life. 17, sandy-haired and tall, Grant fished, built motorcycles with his dad, and played tuba in the school marching band. In fall of 2015, Grant landed a part-time job at a farm supply business. Bluegrass Agricultural Distributors was just across the road from his family's farmhouse in Garrett County, Kentucky.
The week before all this happened, my son sat on that porch and we took his senior pictures. He never got to see them.
That's Grant's mother, Pam Oakley. She and her husband, Mike, avoid that porch now. The view of the silos and metal sheds across the road is just a painful reminder of that November day. Mike remembers it was shortly before closing time. An employee ran to their house.
He said, Grant's hurt. How bad is it? And he said, it's bad. And for this old crippled guy, I got over here pretty quick when they come and got us.
They found Grant lying near a 6-ton forklift. A wheel had run over his chest.
EMTs showed up and he was in so much pain.
Grant died that evening. Later, the Oakleys learned that Grant was riding on the side of the forklift, driven by a 19-year-old employee, even though passengers are prohibited. Grant's clothing may have been cut or he may have fallen. That wasn't clear. The Oakleys had so many questions. Why was Grant allowed to ride on the forklift? How fast was it going? Who saw what happened? They looked for answers in the investigation by Kentucky's Occupational Safety and Health Office, or KIOSH. But the Oakleys found the KIOSH inspector's handwritten notes incomplete and hard to even read.
They closed this case so fast. I mean, so fast. He didn't talk to all the witnesses.
And they
They said that it was not necessary for them to talk to all the witnesses. Who doesn't talk to the witnesses when somebody dies? Who won't talk to the witnesses?
A review by the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration found that Kiosh had failed to interview several witnesses and failed to obtain signed statements from the few people interviewed. Those failures, officials said, made it impossible to tell if more serious work safety violations might have occurred. That left the Oakleys with lingering questions that still add to their grief. And, they say, the state's sloppy work also hurt their attempt to hold someone accountable.
Anytime somebody dies, I want to look into it.
That's Andy Sims, the Commonwealth attorney for Garrett County. Sims thought there might be grounds for criminal charges in Grant's death. But the Kiosh investigation wasn't much help.
Didn't have any recordings of the interviews. It looks like I have just scribbled answers to questions. I don't even have the questions that were posed to elicit those answers. So it was really hard for me to get anything at all from that investigation.
So Sims did his own investigation with state police. They found several additional witnesses Kiosh had not interviewed. But by then, Sims said, time was working against him. He sought homicide charges but could not get a grand jury to indict.
You know, once the incident occurs, you know, there's kind of a ticking clock about conducting a proper investigation. And I feel that because there was that delay, it really impaired our chances of getting a criminal indictment.
After Grant's death, federal officials got more complaints about Kiosh investigations. A special federal study this year found that the flaws the Oakleys pointed out were not an exception. Rather, they were the rule. The report found numerous deficiencies in nearly every fatality case over 2 years. Witnesses were not interviewed. Workplace hazards were not corrected. Penalties were reduced without reason. Federal officials said that in many cases, it appears that the state was, quote, just taking management's word. Again, Mike Oakley.
It's just everything about it is a slap in the face and disrespectful to that individual and that family. It's just, there's nothing. And all we wanted was some answers.
This November, the Oakleys are selling their house. Across the street, another for sale sign hangs on the gate near where Grant died. The company's out of business. One of the owners has died. The surviving owner declined to comment for this story, saying only that what had happened should stay in the past. But the Oakleys are also thinking about the future. They've been organizing workers' memorials, where others who have lost family can gather, remember, and work for change in the state agency.
They need to get some real people in there doing this job. It needs to be somebody with some knowledge and some compassion to help families like us.
Mike Oakley is also becoming more active in safety training, focusing on young people just entering the workforce.
And if I can save one father from sitting here, or one mother, not have to do this, that's one. That's worth it. That's worth it.
For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Jeff Young in Lancaster, Kentucky.
That story originally aired in November 2018. I wonder what state officials thought about hearing the voice of Mr. Oakley, who has basically given up on receiving justice for his 17-year-old son's death. Now he's just hoping to help prevent other parents from losing their children. So what happened after this report aired? Did state officials make any effort to change the way they investigate workplace deaths like Grant Oakley's? Our producer Roxy Todd talked with Eleanor Klibanoff to find out the latest.
Eleanor Klibanoff, thanks for joining us on Inside Appalachia.
Thanks for having me.
So since these stories first ran last year, have there been any updates?
Yeah, so there's been some pretty significant changes at the Kentucky Labor Cabinet since our stories ran and since the sort of critical federal audit was publicized through our stories. Right when the story came out, we really didn't get tons of feedback. We didn't, we heard from some Democrats who sort of took it as an opportunity to criticize the Republican gubernatorial administration, but you know, we still didn't hear from the Labor Cabinet and we still didn't hear from the governor. And I think there was that moment where we thought maybe nothing is going to come of this. I actually sought out the governor for comment because we'd been hearing from sources that, you know, this was something they were talking about in his administration. And though we had reached out to him multiple times for comment, we thought maybe he had just missed those messages. So I went to a press conference in Louisville where he was cutting the ribbon at a new building for a tech company that's based here in Louisville. And after the press conference was over, I asked him if he was willing to talk about the story we'd done and our findings.
Thank you. Appreciate
the Kentucky
it.
Labor Cabinet failed to properly investigate nearly every worker fatality.
I mean, with 700 Sorry. People here now, I think it's awesome. I mean,
yes,
the fact that 400 of them are here.
Are you happy this with, the, is, I mean, happy with APRIS, what your Labor Cabinet
APRIS,
is doing?
APRIS growing like this
like
here in Kentucky is awesome.
Are you
and this
happy
is
with
really,
the job
I mean,
your Labor Cabinet is doing
the reason we come and
fatalities?
Cut ribbons for things like this is
yes.
to celebrate the fact that a tech company in this town growing
with
this kind of
success. Those workers just as safe, at, you know, whether they're working here
I mean,
or
really,
wherever.
I love the
is
fact
your labor
that we
cabinet,
have this capability. In this
are you
town?
Happy with the work your labor cabinet is doing investigating worker fatalities?
So,
we
yeah,
found.
I mean, truly, I do.
Is
I
there
think,
a federal
I think
takeover
has
coming
a great
of
future.
Your state
really
OSHA
do.
Program?
Thank you.
He did respond, but not to the questions that I was asking. We did eventually get comment from the Labor Cabinet. Actually, Labor Secretary David Dickerson wrote an op-ed in the Lexington Herald Leader, which was the first comment on our story, in which he both accused us of cherry-picking our facts and also promised some pretty big reforms to the agency, saying that he was committing to, quote, raising the bar for his agency. So they promised new equipment, they sent all their inspectors back to remedial training, and got pay increases to help attract and retain more inspectors, which was part of the problem is just a lack of sort of institutional knowledge because so many inspectors were just staying for 1, 2, 3 years and then moving on, by which point you maybe aren't even equipped to do the more serious fatality investigations. And then finally, 6 months after the story ran, we got an interview with Dwayne Depp, Commissioner for Workplace Standards. He oversees Kentucky's OSHA agency, and he was not in charge during the period that this audit covered, but he took over last summer. And he was willing to admit that his predecessors had made some pretty serious errors, particularly in investigating worker fatalities. So he conceded to a lot of our findings and basically said he was brought in as a change agent. He was brought in to really change the culture at the agency.
So our efforts are focused strictly on ensuring that every complaint we get in or every worker fatality and or injury or illness, that we have corrected those deficiencies and we're producing a good product for the citizens of the Commonwealth, because we don't want, under no circumstances, do we want any families to feel like those families have felt in the past.
So in some ways, as a journalist, I find it really encouraging to hear stories like this. Your reporting may have been what led officials in Kentucky to improve their system for worker safety. But I do wonder, without these types of investigative reports, would the government be making changes?
Yeah, I think, you know, the Labor Cabinet says that they were working on these reforms before the story came out. That may be true. But the other thing to note is that Kentucky had been for many, many years getting these really critical federal audits. This one was particularly critical. But, you know, for many years, they just were getting dinged on all these things on, you know, not enough inspectors and not enough training and not enough inspections and not going to the correct inspections and not, you know, any number of things. And they weren't really fixing those things. And so it is possible that these problems would have just been quietly fixed. But, you know, we know that they had never, you know, reached out to these families. We know that they had never spoken publicly about these problems, let alone the solutions. So, you know, I think at the very least, we were able to sort of shine a light on a problem, and all the better if they say, you know, they were always going to fix it. How fantastic.
And tell me, how does Kentucky's worker safety program differ from other state programs across the country or here in Central Appalachia?
Sure. So Kentucky is what's called a state-run plan, which about 28 states have their own state-run plan. Kentucky, Tennessee, Virginia, Indiana are all state-run plans, meaning that the federal government has basically given them the authority to run their own OSHA agency. And the federal government has oversight, as we see with these federal audits. The standard is they have to be at least as effective as the federal standard. And if they aren't, the feds are able, theoretically, to come in and take over. But the other states, the remaining 22 states, are what's called federally run plans. So that's West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania. And that basically means that they don't have their own OSHA agency. The federal government, you know, they've got offices in West Virginia, in Ohio, in Pennsylvania, but they are federal employees and they have no real local control over that. There's pros and cons to both of those things. The advantage of a state-run plan and the reason states want that is because they want that local control. And they say, you know, who knows the problems facing Kentucky's workers better than Kentucky? And the good thing is it does allow you to move beyond federal standards. So a good example of that is California, which is a state-run plan. It is not just as effective as federal worker safety standards. They really exceeded federal worker safety standards. So California's OSHA program, they enforce rules about ergonomics and rules about fire safety that we don't have here and rules about pregnancy protection and things that, I mean, I guess are seen as sort of more progressive worker safety. They go far beyond the required standard. So that's sort of the idea, is like hand the reins over to the state and let them enforce the rules as strictly as they want, as long as they're doing it at least as strictly as federal OSHA would.
And at the federal level, is the OSHA program running smoothly? Are there issues with staffing or financing?
Yes, is the answer. I think it's pretty safe to say from talking to experts that there is no OSHA plan, state or federally run, that is like really doing as well as it should be. It's always sort of a funding problem. It's always a lack of resources. It's always sort of under attack with regulations and things like that. But particularly right now, federal OSHA is really struggling. And so that's going to affect states like West Virginia, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. And it affects states like Kentucky where, you know, perhaps one approach would be for the federal government to come in and take over the program. And they're just completely do not have the resources to do that. Like they barely have the resources to do the enforcement in the states that they do manage. There's been a lot of changes to OSHA under the Trump administration. It's worth it to say that, you know, the Obama administration was not like the golden days of OSHA either. So under Trump, we've seen the number of compliance, safety, and health officers on the federal level fall to an all-time low. So there's only 870 compliance officers nationally sort of inspecting all the remaining states. And if you compare that to under the Obama administration, from 2009 to 2011, the agency had more than 1,000 inspectors. Although by the time he left office in 2016, that had dropped to about 950. And that's all according to Politico. And so, you know, we've seen the number of compliance, safety, and health officers drop under the Trump administration. We've also just seen like a lot of worker safety regulations get rolled back. You know, the when President Trump was running for office, he talked a lot about deregulation, but made a real point of saying that he was not going after worker safety regulations. And according to a lot of national reporting, that hasn't really held up. He's rolled back protections for miners, for offshore oil rigs. I think a big thing that got a lot of attention nationally was sort of a small thing that happened at the Agriculture Department where they raised the line speed at meatpacking plants. You know, meatpacking is a really dangerous industry, and they've rolled back a lot of protections that make those a little bit safer. And then there's also just been major changes at OSHA. A good example of this is that under the Trump administration, the Department of Labor no longer has its list of worker deaths listed on its homepage. They just basically have said, like, that's not a requirement. So you don't need to have a list of who has died at what employers. They've also, like, loosened reporting requirements for injury and illness data and other things that just basically make it easier for employers that maybe don't have as strong safety records to not have to be accountable to that. So those are changes that are going to affect both those federally run plans like West Virginia, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. And also it's going to have a pretty quickly, it could have a trickle-down effect on those state-run plans, including Kentucky, Tennessee, Virginia, and Indiana.
So what's next in Kentucky for the worker safety program, do you think?
So these annual federal audits usually come out in August. We don't know exactly when, but we'll be keeping an eye on that. And, you know, they'll be looking to see that there were some pretty significant changes. The tone and tenor of last year's audit made it pretty clear that there would need to be big changes between then and now to show that they were trying to fix some of these problems that they identified. You know, these audits reflect the administration that they represent. So it is we don't yet know how harsh that audit will be. And we don't know. There's not much that the federal government really can do with the funding situation that they're in right now. So we'll see how harsh that audit is and do a little digging on our own to sort of see how that tracks with what's actually happening inside Kentucky's OSHA program. It's also worth noting that in November, we've got a gubernatorial election. Governor Matt Bevin is running against our current Attorney General, Andy Beshear. So I guess depending on how that goes, it could also mean a big shakeup at an agency like the Labor Cabinet.
Again, Eleanor Klibanoff is a reporter with the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting. She was speaking with our producer, Roxy Todd. With help from the Ohio Valley Resource and the Center for Public Integrity, Eleanor investigated how Kentucky's state OSHA program failed to adequately protect its workers. And a federal audit of Kentucky's worker safety program confirmed these failings. As Eleanor mentioned, a second audit is expected at the end of the summer. Eleanor says the families who lost loved ones plan to keep fighting for change, even if the government doesn't. So as we just heard after the series of stories called Fatal Flaws first aired last fall, there have been several personnel changes in Kentucky's worker safety program. This year, officials from the Kentucky State Worker Safety Program Agency acknowledged that there are failings in Kentucky's system, but the state labor cabinet says they are improving the way they investigate and prevent worker fatalities. Families who lost loved ones in workplace accidents have been waiting for these changes for years. Eleanor Klibanoff visited with some of them earlier this year on Memorial Day and was joined by some unexpected guests.
In the lobby of the Grand Theater in Lancaster, Kentucky, Mike and Pam Oakley are setting up their annual event. There's a table with photos of their son, Grant, mementos and memories of a life cut too short.
In 2015, we lost our son, Grant. 17 years old on his second day at work. He was still in high school, but he wanted to work.
And right across the road from our house where we live and raised him.
This is Mike and Pam's story, how their son died on the job and how the State Worker Safety Agency failed to properly investigate his death. For years, they've been telling this story to anyone who would listen. The state never did until today.
No, there he is right there.
Great. Dwayne Depp.
My pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank
you so Depp much. Is Kentucky's Commissioner of Workplace Standards. He took over in July 2018 after a critical federal audit found that the state had failed to properly investigate nearly every single workplace fatality in a two-year period.
Hello, how are you?
Yes, ma'am. I'm David Dickerson. I'm Governor's Secretary of Labor.
I see your picture.
Depp brought his boss, David Dickerson, and federal state OSHA coordinator Chuck Stribling.
I hope that we can build a future together.
Absolutely. I can guarantee you we'll be able
to. Well, we're working at it, I'll tell you.
Well, we're going to work with you.
Absolutely.
We're happy to have your input. Please don't be bashful.
Oh, I am. As long as you get to know me, you'll see that I'm not.
In a recent interview with KYCIR, Depp admitted for the first time that the state had mishandled fatality investigations prior to his tenure. He laid out changes that he has implemented, like salary increases to retain inspectors, additional training requirements, and creating what he calls a culture of accountability. At that point, he had yet to meet with any of the families involved in those mishandled investigations. But just a few weeks later, he showed up at the Workers' Memorial Day event to share his plans with the Oakleys directly.
What we're doing in our department now, just really going back to a lot of the basics, you know, making sure that we know how to write a report, we know how to interview, we know how to do all those things.
Since the day his son died in 2015, Mike Oakley has been fighting for these kinds of reforms.
Well, you have no idea what this means to see you three standing here. You have no idea.
In the long run, Oakley wants more than just a drop-by visit. He wants to be part of the change, including helping to educate state inspectors on how to work with grieving families. Depp agrees to a follow-up visit to hear him out.
Here's my card, and it's actually got my cell phone number on it. It's my personal cell phone. Use that anytime you want to, anytime you have questions about anything.
The three state officials take their seats in the Grand Theater, the only suits in a crowd of work shirts and motorcycle vests. They're surrounded by the friends and families of those who have died on the job over the last few years, the living victims of those mishandled investigations. Workers' Memorial Day is held every April 28th, chosen to celebrate the day federal OSHA was created in 1971. Around the country, groups gather to read the names of workers who have died on the job in the last year.
Jordan Doyle, Andy Schlanding, David Robinson.
Andy Sims, the Commonwealth's attorney for Garrett and Jessamine County, does the honors here.
Collins, John Williams, John Fugate,
Mike Oakley sits by the side of the stage, choked up once again. This crusade he's been on the last few years is for Grant. But it's also for these people, these names, and the loved ones they leave behind. He's fighting so no one else will have to, and he has no plans to stop. But for the first time in a long time, Mike Oakley's hopeful that he's finally fighting with the state rather than against it. For the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, I'm Eleanor Klibanoff.
Up next, many workplace fatalities across the nation are preventable. So why aren't they? And when it comes to worker compensation, why are state politicians in a race to the bottom to offer lower insurance premiums to lure businesses? And what is this race to the bottom costing workers? You're Inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilly.
Support for Inside Appalachia is provided by Concord University in Athens, West Virginia. With career-focused liberal arts education in more than 80 degrees and programs to pursue various career options, not just a single job. More at concord.edu.
Inside Appalachia is supported in part by the West Virginia Food and Farm Coalition, helping West Virginia farmers markets provide food harvested that morning and brought to you fresh from the farm. Local market locations available at farmfreshwv.com.
Today on Inside Appalachia, we're looking at the human impact of weak worker safety regulations and a breakdown in the system that's supposed to protect our workers. Next, we'll explore how worker safety agencies across the country are and are not working to protect the lives of millions of Americans. Howard Berkus has been reporting on these issues for nearly 40 years. He recently retired from NPR after 38 years investigating topics like black lung disease, mining disasters, workers' compensation, and other worker safety issues here in Appalachia and across the country. He spoke with Inside Appalachia producer Roxy Todd about some of the people he's interviewed and how they've been affected by a system that fails so many workers.
So, Howard, as somebody who's covered worker safety issues for decades, are you surprised to learn that the state OSHA program in Kentucky is maybe not following through on a lot of these investigations as we would like to hope?
I'm not surprised at all, because I have found in work that I've done in situations in which the federal government leaves to states enforcement of whether it's workplace safety or air pollution or other things, mine safety, that the state agencies don't necessarily do what they're supposed to do. And they can get away with it if the federal agency that's supposed to be keeping track of what they're doing doesn't keep close track of what they're doing. So I'm not really surprised at all.
You've covered in the past a number of different government entities that regulate and try to keep people safe. Can you talk a little bit about what you've covered in the past? Let's start with your grain bin series that you did a few years ago for NPR.
That was a series in which we found that there have been, over the years, around 500 workers who died horrific deaths in grain bins. You know, grain bins aren't a workplace that you think of as dangerous, and certainly that it's not something that many people outside of farm country are aware of, but there's great danger involved in going into a grain bin filled with grain, especially corn, because that grain acts like quicksand if it starts to flow while a worker is in the bin. You can go under in seconds and suffocate very quickly. And what we did was we investigated these deaths that have occurred. 2010, we found, was the worst on record for fatalities in grain bins. And so, you know, we decided to look into that. Why was that happening? Given that there were fairly strong regulatory rules that applied to grain bins.
And let's play a little tape from one of the first parts of this series. You talk to people about a really emotional death that happened where a young teenager actually died in one of these grain bins.
This was an incident in 2010, the one, again, the worst year on record. And this was the worst incident of that year. in which two teenage boys were trapped and died, and a third was also trapped and witnessed their deaths. This is this section of the story begins with Will Piper describing what happened to him and his friends in that bin.
It created a quicksand effect, and Wyatt ended up getting caught up in it and started screaming for help. Me and Alex went in after him, and we each grabbed one side of him under his armpits and started dragging him out, and got pretty close to the edge of the quicksand, and then we started sinking in with him. Wyatt went under, and then me and Alex kept sinking deeper and deeper up to our chests, completely just trapped in the corn.
It was about 10 a.m. when another friend and worker frantically called for help.
I'm on it.
911, what's your emergency?
Hi, I have a person stuck in a hole in a grain bin out at the mill in Mount Carroll, Illinois.
Okay, give me your address.
Matt Schaffner, the supervisor of the facility, desperately tried to dig, but the kernels just flowed back in. So he climbed out of the bin to guide arriving rescuers. Alex Pacas screamed he didn't want to die.
One last chunk of corn came flowing down and went around his face, and I still had one arm free, and I tried to sweep it away from his face as much as I could, and eventually there was just too much, and after a little bit, his hand was sticking up above the grain, and I could just see his scalp, and his hand stopped moving. And the corn was up to my chin at that point.
The first rescuer appeared, harnessed and tethered to keep from sinking. He held a 5-gallon bucket with the bottom cut out.
He slammed it down to my shoulders and scooped all the corn to get it away from my face so I could breathe. I didn't think they'd be able to get me out of there because the pressure was just so great.
Emergency radio traffic buzzed with pleas for help.
Oh my God, we need everything. Grain sacks, K-12 blades to cut into the bin.
We need approximately 12 semis for unloading grain.
Can you have them go to Eastland Feed and pick up their grain tube? Pick up the grain tube from Eastland Feed.
Rescuers pounded a plastic grain tube into the corn and around Alex and Will. They then used grain vacuums to extract the kernels inside the tube with the teens.
After about an hour went by, they had uncovered Alex's face. And then after a couple more hours, his whole body was exposed. And I actually had to lean in and hug him so they could vacuum out behind me. And they got it down to at my waist and tried pulling me out. And that wasn't working. So they had to keep vacuuming.
Will was trapped for 6 hours before he was finally freed. It took another 6 hours to find Wyatt's body in the corn.
Carroll County from command.
Go ahead, command.
Carroll, will you mark time all rescue complete?
10-4, command.
The dusty bodies were brought out long after dark, skin pockmarked like golf balls from the pressure of the corn. At a church nearby, Annette Pacas brushed Alex's black hair and used a wet cloth to wipe away the filth. Will later told her about her son's final moments.
He prayed the Our Father. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. It was a long time before I could say that prayer again, because every time I went to say it, I heard the panic in my son's voice as he was saying that prayer. It's one of the things as a mom that I've really struggled with, is that my son died in terror. He didn't die in peace. He died in terror. And it didn't have to happen.
And when you play some of that for people, what are the reactions that you hear? I mean, I find that it's extremely emotional for me to hear that mother. I imagine that this kind of story hits home for a lot of people.
You know, I've given talks before occupational safety and health experts from federal agencies and state agencies and private companies and academics. I've done several talks where I've played that audio, and everybody in the room is just stunned. I think what happens in the world of regulation is it's easy to talk about workplace safety regulations in a way in which you don't recognize the human impact of the failure to regulate. And what that heart-wrenching scene and incident does is it grounds us in the horrific human loss that takes place if we're not vigilant with regulations. I mean, regulations exist for a purpose. They exist to keep workers safe. And I think what this really brings home to people is how important it is to keep workers safe and to follow what the law says and to enforce regulations rigorously.
So when these people have died in these grain bins, what was the regulatory failure that led to these deaths?
The failure here is something that is ubiquitous in the workplace safety world. One of the ways, actually the main way that workplace safety is enforced is by levying fines when there are violations of safety regulations. The fines are there to be a disincentive for employers to have unsafe conditions. If you fine an employer for an unsafe condition, theoretically that, you know, that attaches a cost to that, and the employer then is encouraged to operate safely. And what happened in these grain bin incidents, and this happens in other realms with other regulatory agencies, is that the companies involved were fined, and sometimes, you know, fined hundreds of thousands of dollars. But what our investigation found was that those fines were routinely reduced, and they were reduced a significant amount, more than 60%. In the five worst incidents that we documented in the last 20 years, the fines were reduced from 50 to 97%. And so it raises a question about how significant is an enforcement system based on fines if the fines are reduced enough so that the employers are not essentially punished. The other thing that this situation is an example of and applies to other workplace safety regulation is that in the workplace safety world on the federal level, the violations, even if the employer is negligent, even if the conduct is egregious, even if workers die, the maximum penalty for violation that leads to those deaths is a misdemeanor. There is not a felony that can be applied on the federal level to these cases. Workplace safety laws in this country are very weak. If those kids had a bald eagle with them in that grain bin and that bald eagle died, that would be a felony because the environmental laws are much stronger than the workplace safety laws. If those kids had poured poison into a stream outside the grain bin, that would have been a felony. The Justice Department has a division that focuses on environmental crimes. It does not have a division that focuses on workplace safety crimes. This situation with grain bins was an example of how weak workplace safety laws are. The U.S. attorney in Illinois, where this situation occurred, declined to prosecute, even for misdemeanor. And prosecutors aren't inclined to file misdemeanor cases because no prosecutor makes a career on misdemeanors. And they have plenty of felony cases, serious felony cases that they're dealing with. So the system is not set up in a way to punish employers who behave egregiously, who put workers in danger knowingly.
And you mentioned that prosecutors are unlikely to prosecute people for these misdemeanors. And here in West Virginia, we saw the case of Don Blankenship, who was not charged with a felony. He was charged with a misdemeanor. And that even that case itself, was rare that someone would prosecute. Can you talk a little bit about that?
That was incredibly rare that a U.S. attorney filed a misdemeanor prosecution involving a coal mine executive. When their companies are involved in a tragedy like the Upper Big Branch mine disaster, 29 people killed, which Don Blankenship was not directly prosecuted for. He was prosecuted for safety violations that contributed to that disaster. But it was extraordinary that a prosecutor went ahead and filed a case and spent so much time on a misdemeanor case. That was incredibly rare.
And I'd like to switch gears for just a minute to ask you a little bit about how our workers' compensation program is changing. And you did a series of investigations into how worker compensation programs really vary state to state.
Workers' compensation is not federally regulated or controlled. It's a state-by-state form of regulation and laws. So every state is different. The benefits that an injured worker receives can be dramatically different from one state to another. In the series that we produced with ProPublica, we showed that, for example, a worker who lost an arm in an industrial accident in Alabama might get, $50,000 in lifetime benefits for losing an arm. Just across the border in Georgia, the benefits could be $750,000 or more. What we also documented as we looked at changes in state law, we looked at every state, we looked at changes in state workers' comp laws over the past 13 years. And what we found in 33 states was a systematic cutting back of benefits, of restricting the length of time that benefits are paid in some states, of making it more difficult to qualify for benefits in the first place, of giving employers control over medical decisions and benefits. It is what some people in our story described as a race to the bottom, as state after state decided we need to lower workers' comp premiums for employers because they need to compete with lower premiums in the next state over. And so they would essentially reduce benefits and give employers more control, with workers then not getting what they were promised, which is the medical care they need as the result of a workplace injury, and at least some money to live on as a result of that injury. I think it's indicative of what happens in these workplace safety systems that we have, whether it's workers' compensation, whether it's the Occupational Safety and Health Administration's administering of rules and regulations, whether it's the Mine Safety and Health Administration taking care of coal miners and making sure that they're safe. I think what happens is that the people involved get caught up in the regulations that they're enforcing. They may lose sight of the impact on human beings, and there may be some greed involved on the part of the insurance companies or the employers who put either production over safety or put profit over safety. It's not that the people involved are bad people, but they get caught up in whichever motivation causes them to not put the health and safety of the workers first. You know, these laws exist to get us past these cross pressures and to make sure, workers are kept safe. They need to be stronger in order for them to do the job they're designed to do. And regulators need to be as rigorous as possible in order for workers to be protected.
Howard, thanks so much for all your reporting. Howard Berkus has just retired from NPR. He worked for 38 years as an investigative journalist. Howard, thanks for talking with us today.
You're welcome.
We heard from several families looking for answers after their loved ones died while on a job. They described how difficult it was to hear that their lost loved ones were not trained to do their jobs and shouldn't have been doing them in the first place. I can relate to so many of these family stories. My father, Chuck Lilly, died while on a job site in 2001. He was electrocuted, and I feel in my heart that his death should have been prevented. He should be here with us now. My dad worked so hard, so much in fact that he'd fall asleep in the driveway after he got home from work. He'd often tell me to get an education so I wouldn't have to work like a dog like me, as he would say. He often wouldn't have the resources he needed to do his job, but despite all these things, my dad did the job anyway. Until the day when he didn't come home from work. The human impact? My family's never been the same. The traditions and special moments just don't seem to matter or even happen anymore. And I still get mad and terribly sad to see my kids grow up without him. Thanks for listening. Until next week, thanks for joining me as we journey throughout Appalachia. We had help producing Inside Appalachia this week from the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, the Ohio Valley Resource, and the Center for Public Integrity, and NPR. Music in today's show was provided by Dinosaur Burps, Matt Jackford, Michael Howard, and Ben Townsend. Roxy Todd is our producer. Eric Douglas is our associate producer. Our executive producer is Jesse Wright. Liz McCormick edited our show this week. Our audio mixer is Patrick Stevens. You can find us online on Twitter at InAppalachia. You can also send us an email to insideappalachia@wvpublic.org. Visit wvpublic.org to sign up for our new Inside Appalachia newsletter. On our website, you can also subscribe or download all of our stories, or look for the Inside Appalachia podcast wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Jessica Lilly. Inside Appalachia is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting.